Okay, this is a kind of a follow-up to John Bowker's speech here concerning some of the definitions that they're using, as well as some of the modulation techniques. And a couple nights ago, I was talking with a couple members who were asking, you know, how does one station sound louder than the other? You know, why does this station slop more than this other station? You know, why are all these differences? Well, it has to do with what is called the audio processing of the radio station, and how they take their audio and are able to compress it, limit it, expand on it. There's a whole variety of things you can do to garbage up your sound if you want to. Now, what I'm going to do is explain a little bit about that, as well as tell you a little bit about this NRSC2 and its benefits. And I mentioned that you might want to have a radio handy. I've got a couple of radios up here which I use for demonstration, and hopefully you'll be able to hear the difference. As John pointed out, the NRSC1 and NRSC2, looking at it on a mathematical standpoint, it's very easy to see the differences between the two systems. Sitting there trying to listen to it, it's virtually impossible. However, going between standard broadcast system and NRSC2, it's very audible. Now, at first, you're going to sit there and you're going to say to yourself, gee, this sounds great. This is a great-sounding form of transmission. Later on, you're going to be getting mad because you're going to think to yourself, gee, now why can't they make a receiver that sounds this good? That was my first reaction back in 1985 when I heard a demonstration of a Philco AM car radio and how good AM stereo actually sounded, and then got the actual one in the car, and it sounded like dog doo-doo. It was unbelievable. Now, in talking to the manufacturer, Philco, I was told that, well, you don't want to make an AM car radio sound good, because what happens is you tend to pick up the ignition noise. So we roll it off at 5 kilohertz. No one knows the difference. Which, you know, I of course say, you know, yeah, I care. I think it sounds great. Well, you're the exception. So I just want to let everyone know out here that all of you, you know, when you can't hear good AM, I mean, you're the exception.
You know, Fred, when you hear the commercials for the cars and they tell you about this great stereo by JVC, mm-hmm. I mean, depend for those commercials to tell you how good they are.
Right.
And they're telling you this stuff.
A lot of times they can't receive it. Now, what I'm going to do here is I got a song which many of you probably know, called Visions of Love by Mariah Carey. What I'm going to do is I'm going to play this song on this top unit here. I've modified this with a little toggle switch where I can go between standard AM, which is the way you heard WLS, WCFL, and all the big rock stations back in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. And by throwing the switch, you'll hear the difference between that and then going to NRSC2. First of all, we'll just take and give you a demonstration of what the differences in audio quality are. Some of you might remember this little box. It's the SRF A100. Here's another one that can make you madder than the Dickens. This radio here was probably the best AM stereo radio, and Sony decided, well, cost about $10 more to make, so, well, we'll make the A2. And the A2 was equally dog doo-doo. The AM was if I remember the technical standard, it was down some 3 dB at 10 kilohertz. Well, 10 kilohertz is the top part of your high frequency, so, I mean, cymbal crashes and, you know, and things just don't get heard. So why they discontinue these things, I'll never know. Okay, we have a nice dead carrier here. And we'll start the tape up. AM 640. Okay, that is narrow band. I'll switch on wide band. Okay. And when she gets to talking here or singing, we'll switch you in and out of the NRSC. Okay. Standard AM. NRSC2. AM. Listen to the highs. Okay, I'm going to go to NRSC2 in 3, 2, 1. Interesting, huh? That's AM. Now, just to show you that I'm going to go over here and grab the Sony ICF-2010, workhorse of most DXers. Standard AM narrowband. Wideband. There's normal AM. NRSC2. Let me turn off the speakers. AM. NRSC2. And even in the narrowband mode, you can't tell. It's not a lot of times. If I go between it here, you'll hear the click as I hit the switch back here. Hear it garbage up a little bit? It's more intelligible even in narrowband, which is 3 kilohertz. Yeah. And what's happening... leave this song on here for the remainder here so we can demonstrate the FM transmission. Basically, what happens is your modulation envelope on an AM broadcast station, we're on 640 kilohertz here, 630, 650. Your AM modulation makes basically what looks like a small cone. I'll get this going. This information fills up across this carrier as the modulation increases. It fills out more area. Now, many of you who DX probably have heard the differences in stations, some stations which have a tendency to splatter more and more. This is due to the high frequency contents, 10 kilohertz, 15 kilohertz, 20 kilohertz. I mean, there's some stations that even go up to 30 kilohertz. And if you have a Harris SX1 transmitter with an OptiMod AM system, it's not impossible to hit 30 kilohertz on a CD quality recording. So this energy will spill out. What the FCC said in this, and the NTSC committee actually put together was a standard. They said at this high of modulation, you can't go out any further than this. As you go down and out, it widens out to where at 630 kilohertz, you're down some 20 to 40 dB. And this is supposedly to prevent the energy from spilling over onto the next channel. Now, what the interesting thing about this is your ear, and probably one of the biggest proponents to FM broadcasting was the fact of the audio quality that you get with sound. Your ear detects mid-frequencies easier than it detects a high frequency or low frequency. It takes approximately 40 more dB of signal at 20 hertz to be able to hear the same sound at 2 kilohertz or 3 kilohertz. What has happened when developing this system is they found that the loudness characteristics of this signal will produce a sound which is more pleasing to the ear and makes it sound and mimics the FM broadcast. So in a lot of cases, the NRSC2 is protecting this space alongside the AM channel. But at the same time, you as the listener are benefiting because the information is being packed in and cleaned up a lot. Because it's mathematical, you work on a mathematical principle. If you take 30 kilohertz of audio and just pack that into a transmitter, you can only get 100% modulation. Well, some stations maybe put a little bit more than 100%. But mostly you have to pack only the amount of modulation into your transmitter you can to achieve your top limit. If you strip off everything above, say, 10.5 kilohertz, at that point, you can take and pack more energy between 20 kilohertz or 20 hertz and 10.5 kilohertz than you could if you packed in the loudness between 10 and, say, 30 kilohertz. It's just a matter of, you know, putting enough garbage into the pot before it overheaps. So what it has done is it's benefited us as far as the audio quality. Then comes another little thing that a lot of people have learned. Some stations sound louder than others. There are stations where it's a 250-watt daytimer, and they may sound louder than a 50,000-watt station to the ear. Now, I'm going to ask if you have a radio to go over to 99.3. We're going to demonstrate this on FM. We use the same program material. And I've opened up the front of this device here, which is the OptiMod. And to those of you who have not seen how one of these operate, OptiMod, or any basic audio processing system, takes your audio, which is coming in. Here's Mr. Joe Announcer here, speaking into his little RCA DX77, or BK44 in John's, John's lab. The audio comes out into two channels, left and right channel. Goes into the processor. At this point, the processor system will look at the audio and determine where it is supposed to be. If you look at it on a graph of 0 dB, and let's say, for example, the audio is down here. We'll put 10, 20, 30, and put plus 3 here. If the audio is down at 20, minus 20, if you look at a normal meter of some sort, like a VU meter, it's down here in the very lower tenth of it. And every 3 dB of audio is half step of loudness. So if you're listening going between 0 and 20, you're going to hear the difference. It's going to sound very soft. It's going to be the difference between talking like this, difference between talking like this. So the object of a device such as an OptiMod or the discriminant audio processor, which was built by RCA technician, I'm trying to think of his first name now, Durow was his last name, which is where the D comes in, and discriminant, it's Durow Broadcast, and I can, Mike Durow, that's it. Michael Durow, who worked for RCA Systems and was responsible for cutting a lot of the early 45s and developed this technique of taking audio and being able to pack that information onto a 45 so it sounds nice and clean. They came up with a system where they said, if it's minus 20, let's bring it up to zero. That way, if it's soft, it's then audible. Okay, so you get some loudmouth that starts to scream. He's up here. Well, we'll take that back down. Well, that's okay, except what happens when you have a loud bass note that hits? That bass note will then drop everything else, which is in the audio spectrum at the same time. So they came up with the premise of taking and dividing the frequencies into three parts. Low, which would represent maybe a bass guitar, bass drum, instruments below 300 hertz. Mid-frequencies. Mid-frequencies would be from 300 to, say, 4 or 5 kilohertz. And then the high frequencies. High frequencies from 5 kilohertz all the way up to 10 kilohertz. So we take and we compress all these separate bands. Bring them in, compress them separately, matrix them out, and then we take this and we put this information into a limiter. Now, what a limiter does is basically just takes and just chops the living dickens out of the audio. If you have a audio signal, and let's say that audio signal comes in like this, and comes up real high, and this is your limit, just hacks that right off. Now, some of you have heard very buzzy audio on stations. That's because what they're doing is they're limiting this too much. And when you start to cut off the peaks of the audio, it sounds very, very distorted. I guess I can do a demonstration of this right now on the same piece of music. Okay. We're on FM 99.3. As you can see, the modulation or the meter up here is roughly in the 0 degree or 0 dB, 100% modulation. Let's back this, let's take and back this down a little bit. I ran a commercial before and I just let this thing segue. I didn't watch where the pot is and I'm out in the John right now, so. I dropped that down to below minus 20. You can still hear it's very audible. Bring it up to zero. Now I pull a John Records Landecker and crank it. Now can you hear the distortion?
Yeah.
That's because I've gone into over-limiting. And I'm basically taking and chopping the tops off of all these peaks. The chopping off of the peaks causes an audible distortion, which many of you can hear, and some of the broadcasters at times, especially if you're Z-Rock, think it sounds real cool. But unfortunately, it does cause a lot of audio distortion to the person who it's intended for. The audio after it is limited then goes into a device which is called a stereo generator. A stereo generator does nothing more than take this audio, these two channels of audio, and provides a matrix. It takes the sum of L plus R and an L minus R. This audio then, it has added to it a 19 kilohertz pilot tone. And unfortunately, my radios don't have a LED on it to show stereo. But the pilot tone can be turned off, at which time the little red light goes off. It says stereo on your radio. Or if I turn the unit to mono, it'll do the same thing. The 19 kilohertz does nothing more than tell the circuitry within the radio that there is a stereo signal present. At this particular point, it's known as composite FM. And as Bruce has talked about, Bruce Elving has talked about in the SCA circles, there is SCA's, I don't know if there's, is there 54 still people using 54 around at all or not?
Well, 41 used to be the old one, and some are using 57 for dating
data. Okay. You can have these subcarriers, we'll just say 57, 67, 92. You can take these, bring them up into your signal, and then I'll shove them into your transmitter. And
so the pilot tone for the subcarriers is just at a different frequency.
Pilot tone does nothing more than just tell the tell your receiver that here is a FM stereo signal. Some receivers do not really care much about the pilot tone. Others are very dependent upon it. I've seen receivers where if the pilot tone disappears, they still basically stay in the stereo mode. Others I've seen where you've got to saturate the living dickens out of the stereo pilot just to get it to lock decently. You find also in some of the major markets, you'll notice that you'll have stations where as a song is playing such as that, the pilot light starts to flicker. And that's because they're doing what's called composite clipping. They take this signal, after they put all this crap together here, they come out here and they put another limiter because they want to sound loud. They want to be the loudest bozos in the market. So they put this composite clipper. So all at once Mariah Carey hits a high note, it's got to clip it. Well, you're working mathematics here. You got 10 kilohertz or 19 kilohertz pilot, which is modulated at 10%. The rest of your audio is 90. The FCC comes along and says, okay, now you can add these subcarriers, and we'll pack this one on here. We'll take there and put that on at 10%. We'll put this down here at 10%. We'll put this at 10%. Add them all up, and what do you got? You got 130% modulation under the new rules. So what happens is you put a limiter out here. Mariah Carey comes through here. She hits a high note. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. This 130% is going to hold because that's what he's got his limiter set to. Something has to give here in the mathematics. Because if this percentage of 90% goes to 95, what's that going to do to some of these other numbers if the total is 130? Something's going to get knocked. Usually it's the pilot. And if you watch on a radio station, sometimes they have a meter such as this, a needle, which actually shows a level of pilot. And you'll see this pilot needle go like that. It's called modulating the pilot, which is very illegal. Some stations have been fined up to $2,000 for doing that because what it does is it winks out your stereo light on your radio, as well as you'll hear your stereo collapse in on you for a moment as it happens. So what you have to do is you have to go through and process all this stuff together, stick it into your transmitter, hopefully, knock on wood, that the transmitter has a nice wideband characteristic, can handle that, and as well as the antenna transmission can handle all these bandwidths and be able to put it out. This audio, which is going out of here, can be manipulated in many, many different ways. And I bet everyone here has listened to the different qualities of FM stations and probably heard the same song. And you say to yourself, gosh, I didn't hear that way. Z94 is not playing it the same way as Y96. And God darn it, Y96, it doesn't sound as good as T107. Well, this is because what they do is you can play with all these different little circuits along the way and change them. This is going to be kind of hard to see. But in this particular unit, we have, first of all, the master inputs, the level which goes into this particular unit. We have, ladies and gentlemen, available from KTEL for only $6.95, a high-frequency clipper, a clipper. We have a release time, a base coupling, a gate threshold, as well as the ability to modify the composite modulation, the limiting modulation, and the pilot injection. So you're able to sit here and change all this garbage around any particular way you want. A lot of stations, what they'll do is they'll take the pilot. Now, the pilot's supposed to be, supposedly, if I remember, John, the right, isn't the rules 8% to 12? I think that's what it's supposed to be. Most rock stations you'll find will run it right at like 8.2%. Thanks, guys. rather than running it right at 10. So you can adjust the pilot signal. You can adjust the clipping. Now here's some little demonstration of the audio quality. Okay, and there's back in normal mode. Now, I'm going to disable this unit, so we're just working off the Optimod here. Okay, now we're going to add some more bass end. Hear that low end come up a little bit? We're going to make this sound like CHR. Can you hear the loudness fill in? Yeah, we're modulating the living dickens out of this, you know. Yeah. I notice how it got softer there. There's no pauses. This minute she pauses, I wish I could figure out that Phil would probably be a better person to be able to demonstrate this. There's some songs as the level fades. This thing right now, as soon as she fades like this, it brings it right back up. It says, come on up! Yeah. Now I'm going to take it and crank it down again. Now the loudness disappeared. But it sounds more clear, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Especially on those high passages. Now if I want, I can take this three-band unit, add this in. Turn this up. Listen to the pauses. Then she pauses. You know, it's a funny thing. Back in the old days, see, I could even drop that thing way down to it. It doesn't even show. Of course, another nice thing about this, listen when it fades. How many times have you heard that? There was a guy that I used to work with at a radio station that used to believe in all kinds of compression on his signal. The harder you modulate it, the more you clip it, the more processing you put in that signal, by God, you are getting out farther. I mean, if you ever made up one pause, if you had that microphone open and paused just for 2 seconds, six counties away, you could hear a pig fart. I mean, it was incredible. The station had so much modulation that this poor soul had everything, you know, every time you heard Paul Harvey, buzz, hum, crap, you know, good day, and then come right back up again. Loudness is not necessarily something which you need in broadcasting, but it does help in some respects. The audio quality is something else to be desired with some stations. Let me take a quick pause here. Let me find the one song that I need to demonstrate this here. Reverb sounds real great with these type of processing systems. You can hear the spring sitting there and banging for 10 miles. Here. Got something here that Ken Chatterton should like.
Is this the
William Tell Overture?
No.
Oh. 40s.
49s.
Here, I'll compress that sounds.
Let's clean it up.
Sounds a lot better, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's going
good. There's basically how it should sound. But we're changing formats. We're going to go Sweet 98. First of all, we add three channels. A compression and wideband equalization. Bring in the thump, because boy, does rap sound good with thump. Let's take and turn off the gate. Gate circuitry is what says, as far as we go down here, where's this bottom level going to be? I want DC to suck up off the floor, and I want that audio to come right up here. I want that modulation of power. Okay. Should probably get that on. And let's add some compression. Yeah, can you hear the hiss between every time there's a cymbal crash? But the benefit is I can turn this thing down to practically nil, and I'm still audible, which means I can put on a Segway of carts, and I can go to the John or whatever I want to do and come back, and it's still going to be fully modulated. Now, the problem you have with a lot of these modulation techniques, let me just put this back because I cringe every time I hear this. The problem with these modulation techniques is sometimes they can be abused, as many of you know, and there are stations which abuse them. In the FM service, what happens a lot of times is they have basically the same scheme as this, except your frequency is modulating back and forth. How many people know how frequency modulation works? Okay. Frequency modulation, what it will do is your audio is coming in, and you're actually moving back and forth the frequency with the audio input. If you start adding more level to it, you're bringing it out farther and farther and farther. You have a station over here. Let's just move our frequencies here a little bit. And we'll say this is 99.3, and this is 99.5, 99.1. Now, say, for example, we're frequency modulating here within our normal channel, and all of a sudden I kick this thing up, and I just let it rock and roll. And I bring this audio all the way out here to where it's out in this path. What's happening to this poor guy? He's getting creamed. So is this poor guy here.
So is your SCS. Yeah.
Yep. Because, as you know, you look at these mathematics, you start adding them up. If these guys are a nice clean 10, this is a nice clean 10, this is a nice clean 10, and all of a sudden this guy starts really pumping the dickens out of this, and let's just assume he doesn't have a composite clipper where it's just gonna be whatever he's got coming out of here. What happens is a lot of times is this channel will spill over to this channel, or this channel, or this channel. And you start hearing all this audio in different spots. It starts cross-talking and chattering. Basically, I think maybe Bruce can correct me because I've been out of the business long enough of SCA to not really have a grasp on it. But I think if I remember right, the overmodulation of a main channel carrier to subcarrier sounds much like cross-talk, where it's just a very wispy, high-frequency, narrow-band signal. I mean, it's like listening to something in the background, isn't it?
Yeah. It's hard to tell exactly what might cause crosstalk in a given instance. It could be a multipath, poor handling of the signal by the main channel.
You get lots of pops and stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of pops on the peaks.
The pops are usually the clippers. The clippers in here. And what they'll do is they'll take and you're hearing the actual diode, which a lot of different people use. It's a little component, 49 cent diode. They put the audio through, and when it hits a certain spot, boy, it just knocks the dickens out of it. Mm-hmm. That's usually what causes the pop, because as this peak comes, it does one of these. That's why you hear that little that little pop. So the audio itself is going through here. Now, what's that mean to us? It means to us that a lot of times we're being compensated with our signals for the lack of a good quality receiver. You heard the NRSC2. Now, do you not agree? It sounds good. The FM can sound fairly decent if it is controlled properly. The only variable is the quality of the AM receiver or FM receiver. And that's due to manufacturing techniques. And as like I pointed out, you know, talking to Philco, they said, well, sorry guys, you don't need 5 kHz and above on AM. No one needs to do that. So the technical quality of a lot of these signals is mostly dependent not only on the transmission but also on the receiver quality, which is why there's a lot of diversity between the different receivers. Any questions?
One thing I'd say is that don't blame the engineer for the sound quality. It's always managing the signal.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law engineers two AMs and two FMs in Lincoln. KLIN, KZG, Froggy 105, and KWB in Beatrice. And the situation is that they have, I think it's like a six-band digital signal processor, a DSP type unit.
Mm-hmm.
That they're using instead of the old analog type. Now it's all DSP. And it comes in there, and they just... It has a contour of the unit. And the consultant just told me that this is what you have to use for this format and for these programs. And it's on a timer, and at different times of the day...
It switches.
Programs, this thing switches.
Oh.
And if there's a change in program, many times that thing switches.
Processing has gotten to the point where it's somewhat of a science. A while back, about 10 years ago, they figured out that this highly compressed audio that you hear, back in the old days of CKLW and KHJ, the Drake formats, Drake had a policy that they put through which said, this is what you'll use. This device, which was manufactured by Dro Electronics, the first station which ever had this was KHJ. Because they had the problem where they placed something with a little bit of bass in it, and it bottom out the top end of the medium part of the band. So they put the first one of these things in KHJ. Bill Drake liked it so much, he had more of them built for all the different Drake stations, and it wasn't any more than maybe a year or so that every Drake station had a DAP 310. You find that a lot of times audio processing is subjective to the guy who's the high-paid consultant.
Mm-hmm.
There are different theories behind how a radio station should sound. They figured out 10 years ago that there was a thing called listener fatigue. And that is the fact that after you listen to audio that's super compressed, now keep in mind, though, the compression is good from the standpoint of it improves the readability of the signal in a fringe area. You're not going to hear the pops, the buzzes, the clicks, and the noise off the lights when it's super compressed. Relation to, say, a non-compressed signal where it's very dynamic. But they figured out about 10 years ago that this high compression made people fatigued. They couldn't stand listening to the radio station. It actually hurt them to sit there and hear this high-powered modulation. So what they did is they ended up backing down a lot of the compression and the limiting and everything else, and they're getting back a little bit better. But there's still this problem you spoke about where Joe Schmo from Waco, Texas, blows into town and he says, KFAB should sound like this. Here's your dial settings. Well, unfortunately, in your transmission signal, you're coming out of a transmitter. You're going, first of all, into usually, in most AM stations, a phaser, you know, that they use to change the phase of the antenna signal, and you're going into several antenna units. The one that used to kill me was the station I worked at in 85, which was the 12-tower directional up in Detroit, Michigan. That was a beast to control. Every time you go through one of these tuning units, and then all those little tuning houses that you see at the base of the tower, you're taking the signal, the actual transmitted RF, and you have to place it within this envelope. Now, if you don't tune it right, what happens is maybe there's better modulation on the lower than there is on the upper. And if the phasing and the ratios are not correct between the towers or mathematically don't add right, maybe they're inverse. Maybe they come over and flip. You'll hear distortion. How many of you have driven along and heard an AM station where all of a sudden it gets real distorted? It sounds like it's phasing out, almost like Skywave. That's due to going into the null of the station and the bandpasses of all these different ATUs, all these different antenna tuning units and phaser systems are not matched properly.
We have an 8-tower array in Lincoln that used to be channeling this, now KFM2AM, that has this problem all the time. But the problem my brother-in-law comes into is he engineers a site where they have 2AM sharing the same tower.
Mm-hmm.
And the one's 1240 and one's 1400.
Right.
The tower is a 500-foot tower, so it's really not resonating either one, and which is good. Actually, it helped with them, but if it was resonating one, he'd have more trouble. And they found just tremendous distortion problems until they got it right. I mean, it took weeks of work before they could get it so both stations sounded like they should, because every time they would get them out of each other in a coupler, they would have a distortion on one or the other.
There was a big problem, and... John Bacher could probably tell the story better than I can. Apparently, WNBC back in its old days used to share tower with, still do?
FAN.
Yeah, the FAN shares tower with another station, and yeah, you get mixing products between the two, as well as the physical construction of the tower. Ever so often, like, you know, a tower goes together. You have a tower leg and you have a plate. And you have another plate, and then the tower leg goes up, and there's bolts that go across these things, you know. And now what happens? You get a little oxidation. Well, oxidation can act like a diode. Then you get arcing, modulation, you know, spikes and everything else. And boy, I tell you, it just creates all kinds of havoc.
They added an antenna above, you know, when they added the 1405 antenna array. The second FM that's on the tower is 100 kilowatt FM and the 3 kilowatt FM.
Mm-hmm.
When they added the second one, they had to start from scratch on the AM coupler because it messed it up again.
That's the one nice thing I like about AM is the rules still say, and unless we find out maybe next year when John's at the convention, he'll have a little piece of paper that the FCC in their infinite wisdom, you know, I just, with all this stuff, I really have lost faith in the FCC. You know, when NRSC 2 comes out, I picture Al Sykes dressed up as the Wicked Witch of the West saying, "Follow the NRSC 2, you know, and all these stations going, "Come on." You know? But, you know, everyone's got their own little way of looking at these different things. The one nice thing about AM was the fact that if ever you mess with your antenna system, you're supposed to go through and do a complete proof of performance, RF proof of performance, again from scratch. And if it's a station which is a directional, many times the FCC will require you to do it non-directional, show the contour of the signal, and then go to directional and show the contour of the signal, which requires a bunch of guys with field strength meters diddy-bopping around the area, taking measurements, calculating it down on paper, very time-consuming thing to do. So often you'll find that they don't really want to mess with it, or they may mess with it, not tell the FCC, as a couple stations have. But the thing is with a lot of these tuning systems, they too can affect the audio of the system. Mark,
I noticed WEFM was playing rock and roll FM station. They had their compressors set wrong, and whenever they played like this song, "Always and Forever," the long version at the end, when the violins were supposed to come in, if like the threshold was like too high, and it would go silent for a couple seconds.
Oh yeah.
And they had one of these what I call expansion things, some kind of noise reduction thing. And I don't know, you know what's happening on that. But also, I wanted to say that I noticed. KFI, they put one of these, whatever it is, mid-range things on that makes it real loud.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed they don't splatter as much. I don't know how they
do that. Yeah, that is because talk radio stations have figured out. Again, I have this mental picture of somebody who's designing one of these systems, basically doing a valley girl and saying, "Oh my God, I just figured out something." Speech is in the 300 to 3 kilohertz range. So they figured out long back when talk radio started that if you take and boost that range, that mid-band range on those things, and make that super loud, and then cut back the ends, it sounds real loud on the air, but it actually does not overmodulate itself hardly at all. And another anomaly of that is the fact that it then won't splatter because it's not going to come over 10 kilohertz anymore. But the thing is with a lot of stations is they try to make the entire audio signal going out sound as perfect as can be, many of which are sampling their test signal at the output of the transmitter and not from the listener's point of view. Mike.
Yeah, you kind of brought up something tonight that I'll be bringing up tonight. I noticed a few weeks ago when the hurricane hit in South Florida, WQAM's transmitter, which is on Key Biscayne, went dead. And they went off the air. They used their old backup transmitter at the Herald Building. And their backup transmitter sounded so much more crisper than the new transmitter. The new one splatters like crazy, and I've caught them up so many times and recorded it, and it's like they don't seem to care.
Many times, like I said, you'll find that a corporate presence dictates how the station is to sound. Many years ago, and I worked for a station up in Detroit, Michigan, which is an AM station on 560, they had the corporate policy mandated that you will use a CRL processor. You will set these knobs at this particular point. You will provide this much compression. As the song fades out and the needle goes below 15 dB, you will make sure that the gate light comes on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this was probably due to the fact that the consultant had set this up at a station and it sounded very good. However, on our little 500-watt teapot there in Monroe, Michigan, when we would put those to those particular settings, it often sounded very, very raspy, very annoying, and particularly when we got into the different nulls. Let me just go off onto some directional antenna theory here real quick and show something. We got the state of Michigan here, the thumb. Monroe sits right down just above Toledo. The signal of the station had a major lobe going north. It looks something like this. Protecting Frostburg, Maryland, QAM, Miami. What's the 560 down in Texas?
Beaumont.
Beaumont. And then wind in Chicago. So we had several. Now we skipped over Memphis. I don't know what. Working the mathematics out of the skip zone, it didn't bother Memphis at all. It was bothering QAM and Miami. You get off in this little corner here, which I just happen to remember was the 98 degree point of the antenna system. Because of the phasing relationships of the antenna, this processing scheme where they had everything just so tightly packed, you get off in there and it just distorts. And I mean, you could not understand human speech in this thing. As you moved northward through the signal and got out of this null and came north, it would start to sound as if someone was taking the tone controls on the radio and turning them, until finally when you got up into the major lobe, sounded okay again. The only problem with this was the fact that their city of license, well, the station was located in Monroe, but they served Detroit, so really they didn't care about their city of license. It's located right here. And it was to the point where the audio was so distorted, if you sent an EBS test, the receiver, which was monitoring that particular frequency, their receiver would not open up on our EBS tones because the tones were so distorted in the first place. The other thing we found out, too, later on by these settings, was that all this energy which was coming out of here, we're compressing this high band, we're compressing the mid band, we're compressing the low band, and you're sitting there in the studio on the monitor, and it just sounds great. I mean, it sounds like FM. Get out in your car, and suddenly it's like, gee, this doesn't sound right. For 2 months, I never realized in the song by the Monkees, Daydream Believer, that when they said the little line about the clock, that there's actually an alarm clock ringing. You couldn't hear it. And it was finally after being in the studio, I heard this noise, and I turned around and said, someone got a clock in here? No, it's on the song. Oh, gee, that's funny. I've never heard it down at the transmitter site. But the audio processing, you know, a lot of times, like I said, gets dictated by a corporate person, and unfortunately, that does cause some problems in the transmission signal. Many of your audio characteristics, which you have today, are based upon someone, a consultant.